Sex Bob-omb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.
Voices, animal voices, the tremble of cold, the feminine abyssal, reaching my threshold, staring at the tree till I'm blind.
Well, hello, people in the Afterrot world. Welcome to another wonderful Wednesday where we walk past the wizard and we talk about whether or not he's got any donuts. There we go. That's at least one D word for this evening. Tonight on the show, we're going to be speaking with Ezekiel Kincaid. How's it going, Zeke?
Good, man. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
And do you like donuts?
I did when I was a kid. I don't eat them so much anymore.
Okay.
But if it's like the chocolate-covered, cream-filled ones, I will eat those.
All right. Now, I know there's a very distinct difference, and because I look, you know, I'm in Canada. There's a distinct difference between donut availability in Canada and in the U.S. My understanding, in the U.S., they're usually hidden. In Canada, you find them on every street corner.
Interesting.
And if you've ever heard of Tim Hortons, it's huge.
Well, now I know what to eat whenever I take a trip to Canada.
I would recommend in light moderation, because that stuff will make you fat. I'm just saying.
Yeah, may have to do a little strange brew trip, except with donuts.
Well, cannabis is legal up here. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You can find a place or two that does have cannabis-infused donuts, but I do not partake, so I'm not familiar with where those places are.
That is interesting. Is it like the cannabis topping instead of the sugar?
Oh, I think they actually put it in.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, it's like, you know, special brownies?
Yes.
And I'm kind of, this is kind of how the show works. I will start talking about random things, and that's how it goes. Because I know I did not plan on talking about cannabis in the beginning of this show. So, you're an author. What kind of things do you author?
I am a horror author, mainly. That's kind of what I write, what I've been doing for the past about 4 or 5 years. Is
cool.
When I started writing horror, and kind of really the whole spectrum from horror comedy, body horror, splatterpunk, really serious, deep, exalted type horror. Nothing is off the table for me. I've written short stories, pretty much cover every subgenre. So I kind of feel comfortable doing it all.
All of it? But I do want to know more about Exalted. I love that shit.
Yes. So my book that I have out right now, The Dawning with Raventail, I think would fall into that category because it's very atmospheric at times, very surreal, also some very terrifying imagery, visceral scenes, yet it also deals with very deep issues of life, deep theological subjects. So it's kind of in the vein of The Exorcist and Legion that William Peter Blatty wrote.
Yes.
Because those books really, really, really influenced me as a young teenager. And I was like, man, one day I would like to write something that is absolutely terrifying, but also makes people think deeply. And so I was always fascinated by him. And so when I had a chance to write The Dawning and came up with that storyline, it's kind of like this whole series, the Dreadful Death series with Raventail, is really kind of like my magnum opus right now of horror, that I've tried to craft something that is very, very terrifying, but is also very, very deep. And you have characters that really kind of, though they're righteous, they tread on evil and they make mistakes. So very realistic, down-to-earth characters as well. And based on the reviews and based on the feedback I've gotten from beta readers, it seemed to have accomplished that. So I'm very satisfied with it.
Excellent. And I see that it's set in 1817.
Yes.
Is there a reason for going for the medieval? Sorry, not medieval. The, what should I call it? It's not medieval. That's after medieval. Pre-industrial, I guess.
It had to do with how I'm developing the storyline of this series, because the Dreadful Death series is really the first three books, and it starts there. Then the next ones coming out with Raventail kind of jump back and give a backstory of the main demon-like entity, the Tetramet. And then it's going to jump forward again, and the storyline goes from the early 1800s all the way up to present day.
Oh, okay, so it's a theme going forward.
Yes, yes, there are more books to come in it. So I kind of just decided to start at the beginning.
So is Tetramet the name of a real mythological character, or is that like, because every time you say it, I keep thinking of Baphomet?
No, actually, the way I came up with that name is I combined a Latin term and a Hebrew term, tetra and met, and it together it means the dreadful death.
Ah, because I was also going with Tetragrammatron.
Yes.
Which is from the movie, which is escaping my memory right now, and I hate when it does that. Equilibrium. There we go.
There you go. But yeah, it's a totally made-up term and entity that I did for the book series.
Excellent.
Because, you know, using Satan just kind of gets boring at times. It's so overdone.
I have a book over there on my many shelves listing all the angels, devils, and demons. Satan is just one of them.
Yes.
There's thousands.
Yes. Very
much so. Plus
the
ones that we can make up as well.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So, somebody in this chat room said you need sparkly unicorns.
I'm not writing sparkly unicorns.
No, not to write sparkly unicorns, just to have them as a part of an introduction type thing. I think that was one of my regulars, not one of yours.
Oh, okay. All right. I was trying to think who would say that, and I was like, I don't know.
Well, I think from the most part, your people are being quiet in there right now. So come on, say some stuff, ask some questions. I will convey them to him, and he may even answer them truthfully or chaotically. One of the
other. Everything strikes me.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's what this whole conversation is about. It's not about having a specific set pattern. It's about, let's talk about some stuff. So, how long have you been playing with horror, besides just writing? I think you mentioned it was a couple of years. I mean, were you into horror before starting to write it?
Yeah, I grew up as a horror fan. Got hooked on it probably when I was 6 or 7 years old. My first horror film I remember seeing was a made-for-TV movie called The Demon Murder Case, based on one of the Warren's case files with starring Kevin Bacon.
Nice.
And if you've never seen that movie, it's actually quite terrifying at places for a 80s made-for-TV movie. It's pretty well done. So that's what got me hooked on horror at an early age and all throughout my young years. And then in high school, really got into Bruce Campbell, Army of Darkness, all of his stuff. Like, I was the guy in high school is like, man, this Bruce Campbell movie is awesome. They're like, who's Bruce Campbell? I'm like, then, you know, you talk about other things, some of the zombie movies, Dawn of the Dead, nobody had ever heard of that. So I was the guy introducing all my friends to horror flicks other than A Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th.
I mean, they get the main chunk of the pie from everybody in the media and everything like that, but there's so much out there.
Yes.
I mean, I have a little mini project of my own that I do where I'm just looking at how many movies are actually done under the subcategory of horror. Every year, there's at least 1,000 new movies, and that's been only increasing since the 90s.
That's impressive.
Yeah, there's shit tons of movies out there. That's all kinds of things.
Now, one that I would recommend, this is came out in 1990, and it's on Tubi right now. And my fiance and I watched it together, I guess for the first time about 4 or 5 months ago. It's called The Suckling. And there were so many scenes in there that were so off the wall, random, and hilarious. And that one goes down for me as probably one of my all-time favorite, you know,
it looks corny.
What the hell just happened here type movie.
Oh, I can share a few of those.
And so it's, I give that one 2 thumbs up for any horror fan. If you're like horror comedy fan, cheesy 80s and 90s flicks, like, you've got to see The Suckling.
I think you're, she's in the chat room and mentioned that she's, oh God, that movie. Watched it?
Yes, that's probably her.
Funny enough, it has an IMDb rating of 4.6, which is not terrible. I watched a movie that had a much lower rating than that, called Virus Shark. Had a rating of 2.
Virus Shark. I actually had that, it's my queue on Tubi or Amazon?
It's on Amazon.
Amazon.
It had a budget of $182. And I keep harping about this because it's like, well, it doesn't look, but it does, and it doesn't, and it does. It's not great, but it's funny in the not great way.
Yes.
Which,
yes,
many of my listeners know that I watch a lot of those kind of movies.
Yeah, you've got the horror movies that are so bad that they're good, like that, and then you have the ones that are just so bad they're bad, and
yes,
can't make it through it.
And then there's the ones that are so good they sucked, like Battleship.
I never even attempted that one.
I hate that movie with a very strong passion.
Yeah, I never even tried it, so
don't.
Thank you for confirming why I didn't feel like watching it.
I'm a science nerd as much as a horror nerd, and it just triggered every single fiber in my body to say, no! I screamed at the screen when it was going. A lot.
Oh, man.
And I think I saw that at the theater, too.
No.
But I still didn't walk out of it.
Oh, you didn't?
No. Oh, I've only come close on one movie ever doing that. Oh, yeah. Have you ever walked out on a movie?
Yeah, last horror movie I went and saw, I walked out on.
What one?
The Northman.
Oh, I haven't seen that one yet.
I know a lot of people like Robert Eggers just doesn't do it for me, which is really weird for me because I love atmospheric horror and even write it, but I wasn't a fan of The Witch or...
I will concur on The Witch.
Or The Lighthouse or, The Northman either. Like, it just fell flat for me.
I will agree with you on The Witch. I haven't seen the other one you mentioned. And I've yet to see The Northman yet. I thought The Witch was a good period piece, but an overall boring movie.
Yeah, same.
I mean, I know some people love the thing and they think it's awesome and it's great. And it's like, it's the very bee's knees of horror. And it's like, the entire time, you don't know what the hell's going on. And the goat did it.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, not for me.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why I also say everything is not for everyone, and if it was, then we'd be boring as shit.
Yep, we wouldn't have anything to argue about.
Exactly. So, you have a few other books here, but let's go on. I just have to say, your author profile picture that you gave me, and then your author profile picture on Amazon, worlds apart.
Yeah. I kind of have the Mission Impossible thing going on. It disguised my face. But yeah, so, I mean, I look like a totally different person with a beard and short hair. And, so I decided that I wanted to grow my hair out long again and get my piercings again. So I did that.
Excellent. Now you'll fit in with the regular horror people.
Yes.
Exactly. So have you, so is this one being released by Raventail?
Which one?
The Dawning?
The Dawning, yes. It's out, out now by Raventail.
So one of the things I've been liking about the whole group with Raventail Publishing is y'all seem to support each other. Because ever since I started bringing you guys on in different times as guests or whatever, every time I share something for one guy, the other guys will share it as well. And it's like, that's awesome. That's good social form.
Yes, it is. And that's one of the things that I've liked about the authors at Raventail is it's been a very supportive group. They all are behind each other. We all support each other, share each other's stuff. And I mean, I can't speak highly about, you know, some of the guys that I've met through there, especially, you know, you had Andrew Weston on your show.
Yep. I've had him on
really
a couple
good
times.
Guy, good writer, as well. So, you know, people like him and other authors in Raventail, really good guys, not a lot of egos, which is good, because you can definitely get that with any type of entertainment or media business.
No.
Yeah, I mean, imagine that. I mean,
you mean drama?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. Perish the notion.
Yeah. I know it's shocking, but
it's almost like a horror story.
Yes.
Actually, I've heard of a couple of horror stories in the industries. Let's see, there was the romance. No, we're not going to go into any of them. Because we're in positive shit, right?
There we go.
Oh, somebody's actually put a question in the chat. Look at that! Evie has asked a question. So what elements of good should good horror have?
So are we just speaking of, I guess, a blanket statement of good horror? Because I think there may be a
little... just going on a general term basis, yeah.
Okay. I do think there has to be some sort of element of survival or good versus evil. You have to have a conflict. You have to have a character who's facing some sort of evil entity, whether it's a demon, a werewolf, a sadistic killer, a rapist, a captive. So you have to have something there that sets the stage to know that some great evil or tragedy is going to befall our character at some point in this movie or book. And I think that's very relatable to life as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why there's a lot of attraction. I know there is for me, because there's a lot in horror that I think connects with real life, and I think falling prey to unexpected evil or tragedy is part of that. So you've got to have that element.
Like a giant piano dropping out of the sky and go, I'm getting you.
So I'd say that would be a very necessary element of horror. And then in that kind of that same vein, have your character or person, they're trying to figure out how do they overcome this great evil and how do they fight it. And the thing I like about horror is that, you know, a lot of times in the movies and stories we watch, the good wins and they overcome. And then on the other hand, they don't. You know, we all like those horror movies where kind of the bad guy gets the last laugh. Yeah, he gets the last thing. If you think the character's going to survive, then at the end, it's like, boom, no, they're screwed.
Because this is not video, you can't see the big grin on my face, because I love those movies. And if you ever really want to get into it and see that, check out foreign horror movies.
Yes, absolutely.
Huge difference between westernized horror movies and foreign horror movies. Foreign horror movies, we're making a story. Western horror movies, we're making a franchise.
Absolutely. Very spot on.
Yep. I mean, it's just worlds apart some of the movies that come across from some of the places in around the world. I mean, have you ever seen a movie called Troll Hunter?
Yes.
I love that movie.
Yes, that was, was it Danish?
Swedish, Norway, somewhere around there, yeah.
Like that, yeah. Yes, that's an excellent movie. So if anybody listening, you haven't seen Troll Hunter, check it out.
Not to be confused with the very Disney-esque animated series that they came out with a couple years ago.
Yes, and not to be confused with the troll movies either.
Oh, yeah, definitely not them either. No, no. Although, the other troll movies, the one that starred Jennifer Aniston in when she was really young, that one's fun.
Yes. Yes.
All right, we're going to push past that and go on to more. So, right. You've got some other books going on as well.
Yes.
Spread some love on the other books as well. I see something called Fantasia Divinity Magazine. It looks like you're in a couple of magazines as well.
Yeah, I wrote a story for Fantasia Divinity Magazine called Call of the Tetramet, which takes place in my Tetramet universe. And it got voted Editor's Choice for 2018. So it's a story I'm pretty proud of. And it's actually going to be the basis of the novel that comes chronologically next in the series. In the Dawning, in the Dreadful Death series, you have the Dawning, you have the Gathering, and you have the Morning, and they all center around a young girl named Theodosia. And not going to give away the ending or anything, but it sets the stage up for the introduction of a new character who is going to help spur on the cult. And just, I'll refer to him as the Man in Black. And the Call of Tetramet kind of was the basis that I came up with for it. And it has to do with a pastor who goes to this small town in North Carolina around where everything happened with Theodosia, and he begins to uncover dark secrets. So it kind of has a Wicker Man feel to it.
Cool.
With kind of the slow uncovering of a cult that is brewing. And so I use that. This pastor stumbles onto it, and he begins to uncover the secrets of the cult, and it doesn't go well for him.
Why should it? I mean, yeah. Come on.
I mean, just because you're a pastor and a man of God doesn't make you immune from evil.
Or bad things happening.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not going to say any ill of anyone, but things fall out of airplanes all the time.
Yes.
I'm making a bleak reference to Dead Like Us.
Oh, another good one.
Yes, where the toilet falls out of the airplane and kills the girl and she becomes a Reaper. Oh, fun stuff. There's so many amazing things in the world that can do all kinds of dastardly things. So you picked on specifically a pastor. I noticed reading somewhere that you are an ordained minister. Is that something that covers a lot of that?
Yeah, it does. I was a full-time pastor, served in different churches across the South for about 20 years. I did that, so that's a big part of my background. And, you know, I'll incorporate things like that into my stories, you know, not making them preachy or not making them Christian horror. And I think a lot of people in my Christian community, when I started writing horror, I think they thought it was going to be Christian horror, and I think they thought that it was going to be like Little House on the Prairie meets Casper. And it's not. So,
well, that's good, there's a different environment for that.
Then I got a whole lot of backlash and been blacklisted and blackballed by a lot of people, lost a lot of friends over it. Which, well, you know, you question if, the, you know, were they really your friends in the first place?
Exactly. Well, I can tell you I know of at least two other pastors who are horror writers as well.
Yeah, you know, it's a little more common than you think.
Oh, and by the way, we have a two horrors in the chat room now as well.
Oh, that's my fiance. I can tell you that right now.
Ah, there we go.
Yeah.
And there's somebody else in there as well that they haven't changed their name yet, so I don't know who they are.
Very original. Two horrors is her Twitter handle. Gee, we don't know who that is.
Okay.
So, yeah, we have this, like, the one of the things that makes our relationship fun is we banter back and forth and trash talk and are very sarcastic and stuff. And you can go look on her, our Twitter feed, and we go back and forth with each other all the time, just roasting each other. So keeps a lot of humor in the relationship, which I love.
Well, that's good. It's a supportive relationship, I take it.
What's that?
It's a supportive relationship, I take it.
Oh, absolutely. She's my biggest fan.
Excellent. And have you written her into a story yet? And killed? Which I understand is a common thing for us horror writers.
Not killed, but the weird thing is my book, Johnny Walker, Ranger Demon Slayer, the love interest that I wrote in there for Johnny is her, but it was before I knew her.
Uh-oh.
So it was, yeah. So
now
it's crazy.
Now you've learned things.
Yes. So now I've kind of, Johnny's love interest is named Sam. So now I've kind of got my own Sam, and we've got a Johnny-Sam thing going, because in the book they like to roast each other as well. So you,
I like the little blurby thing here on Amazon. Try a redneck demon slayer who leads a demon-killing team called the Bruce Campbells. Rednecks, emos, and a Jamaican unite to take on the forces of hell.
Yes, Johnny was inspired by my love for Bruce Campbell, 80s horror movies, and growing up here in the South. So I kind of encapsulated all of that into a story. And, you know, the way that I wrote Johnny is I had an idea of the characters that I wanted, but I didn't have it outlined. I had no idea where it was going. Everything that I sat down and wrote is just improv. And it makes for a very fun story. Not that it's all over the place. It goes somewhere. But it was so much fun to write, because I just sat back and let the characters take over and said, let's see where this goes when I throw all these people together, and let's see what happens. And the result is it's absolutely hilarious. Everybody who reads the book laughs out loud funny.
Excellent.
It's that humorous and that funny. Very offensive at times. Johnny's an offensive character. He's a, you know, very mouthy redneck. If people are offended by profanity, they might want to steer away from Johnny.
Pretty safe to say that the profane haters are not usually my listeners.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Yeah. By the way, I just had to, with the whole redneck demon slayer thing, I wanted to ask you, have you ever heard of a movie called Bubba the Redneck Werewolf?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Fun movie.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Anytime somebody says redneck and horror, that's the first thing I go back to.
Yes.
Very inappropriate, but very fun.
Yes.
So I'm sensing a theme with demons. Is this kind of a common, popular thing for you on all of your stories?
Not in all of them. In the ones that I had first started writing, which I felt like I could do really, really well at in order to start getting published, I went with that theme because it's something I'm very familiar with my background in biblical studies. I have 3 theological degrees. And so I ended up picking that theme and running with it. I was like, all right, I want to do something really, really funny with it, and then really, really serious with it. And so Johnny is me taking the theme and making it hilarious. The Dreadful Death of Dawning is me taking it and making it very, very serious. Now, one of the things about Johnny is he's very egotistical and arrogant, and he thinks that because he is called by God, that whatever he says is the inspired word of God. And he thinks that whatever interpretation of the Bible he has, like, that's the right one. So there's this passage in Matthew where Jesus casts demons out into a herd of pigs. He casts them out of a man into a herd of pigs. And so Johnny derives from that scripture that the reason the demons went into the pigs is because they love bacon.
He
comes up with this idea that, so the whole, one of the premises is that Johnny's a demon killer, but modern day, living in the South, Oxford, Mississippi, he doesn't see a lot of demon possessed people. So he's got to figure out a way to get people possessed. So he comes up with this idea that because Jesus cast demons into pigs, demons like bacon, so the way to get people possessed is to do a seance involving bacon. And so he starts a Satan club at the local high school, does this big bacon cookout, and then all hell breaks loose. Literally.
Awesome. Actually, so, I would go with that as awesome.
So Johnny, he's so wrong, but at the same time, he's so right, which is what really aggravates people with him in the book.
Or as somebody says in the chat room, a bacon box trap. It's
yes.
A trap. Sorry, Star Wars is everywhere. Just so bacon, you know, there's actually a couple of anthologies called Bacon Horror.
For real?
Yeah, I'm in one of them.
Are you really? Well, I'm going to have to find that.
I don't know if it's still available anymore. I just thought it was funny as shit.
That's a very clever idea.
The publisher went out of business a little while ago, so I know that one's not available. But you might be able to find it somewhere. It might still be posted online somewhere. But yeah, it's fun stuff, man. If you can't have fun with horror, what's the point, right?
Right. So, exactly.
You mentioned a bit of something there in a bit. Do you like to be in a calm environment when you write, or do you like chaotic mesmerism stuff all over the place?
For me, I like calmness and order. So before I write, I'll make sure that I've got my desk cleared and everything out of the way, and I'll sit down. But yet at the same time, I also like some background noise. So depending on what I try to write, I'll put on something that strikes the mood. So if I'm trying to write something really, really dark, I'll put on some death metal.
Death metal.
Yes.
Like
and
who?
With Slayer, Lamb
good.
Of God.
Lamb of God, good.
Apparently yeah, Lamb
coming
of God.
Around
I, was
touring.
Actually, listening to Lamb of God earlier today in my truck.
Nice.
Memento Mori, I had that blast. And,
very awesome.
And then, like, with Johnny, when I would write it, I would put on Bruce Campbell movies.
Bubba Hotep. Love that
yes.
movie.
Yes.
Oh, have you seen the new Doctor Strange yet?
I have not.
Okay, then I say nothing more.
Okay.
Because one of my backup episode solutions was going to be talking about that movie.
Yes, I have
but
not
there's
seen
a reason.
It yet.
Bruce Campbell is in it. It's the only thing I'm going to say.
My oldest son wants to go see it, so I think we're going to try to go check it out here pretty soon.
It is a fun movie. A lot of people keep saying, oh, it's horror. It's like, no, it's a little bit horror. There's a lot of horror to it, but it's not a horror movie by the least. At least
in my
opinion.
I've seen arguments on that. Like
exactly.
People added on Twitter and other social media outlets.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of that, how important is it for you for selling your books through social media? Like, is that your primary... method to get the word out right now? I mean, bearing in mind we also are coming off of the pandemic, as it were.
Yeah, I have a lot more success with Twitter. Like, Twitter works well for me. Instagram, I still haven't really figured that one out. Facebook is hit or miss for me because it's weird. Like, on Facebook, I have, like, my really Christian circle and then also my horror author circle. Mm-hmm. And I have a few in my Christian circle that read my stuff, but for the most part, they pretty much just ignore what I post when it comes to that. So Facebook is hit or miss for me. Twitter is where I get the most interaction and stuff like that, and had some reviews on my works come from Twitter. Also, by word of mouth here down in Baton Rouge, where I live, I've been able to sell books. I work in pest control, and a lot of my customers know that I write horror, and so they bought some stuff.
You've got scary critters. Here's a horror book.
Yes.
Wait a second. Baton Rouge, as in Louisiana?
Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I know somebody else down there, and I'm not going to do the whole, hey, do you know so-and-so? Because people do that to us up here in Canada all the time. You know what I mean.
Yes, I do. Baton Rouge is a pretty big city. So.
Yeah, I've seen pictures. It's like, ooh, that's about the size of Toronto. Nah, it's a little bit smaller, but still, that's pretty big. Toronto's got like 4.5 million people in it.
Yeah, Baton Rouge is not that big.
Yeah, it's still big enough to say, I don't think you're going to know so-and-so over in the corner around so-and-such.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. But people still do that. I mean, there's a lot of people do that. People do, hey, do you know so-and-so over in London? London's also a big city of about 6, 7, 8 million people. Yeah, sure, I know them. They're around the corner.
Yeah, I think I saw him in the park the other day.
Exactly.
Guy wears a coat and a hat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes when it's raining, has an umbrella. Sorry, a brawly.
Yeah, that's the guy.
Yeah. So have you ever been to any conventions yet? Has that been a thing for you yet?
Not yet. I am planning on going to one here in Lafayette, Louisiana, coming up in October, which will be my first one to go to. Because sadly, right when my first book dropped, when Johnny dropped, that's when COVID hit. And so I really lost some momentum along with some other things going on in my life at that time. Really lost a lot of promotion momentum during that time. So now I'm trying to make up for it and get signed up for conventions and stuff. And, you know, trying to get money saved and set aside to be able to do that. So I'm hoping these next few years for me, I have a lot of good hope and expectation now that I will be able to start promoting like I've wanted to promote in the past. So I'm planning on, and the only thing that stinks about being down here in Louisiana, like, all of the good cons are up north.
Yep. Midwest, for the U.S., most of the good cons are in the Midwest. A couple in SoCal and a couple out in Seattle.
Yeah, and I know you got some Virginia, the Scares That Care, and AuthorCon and stuff like that.
Yeah, and then at any given time, there's a dozen. There's at least one a month, I think, up until when winter starts to truly set in, and then a few others. If you get the opportunity to get towards Pittsburgh, there's a nice small one called Horror Realm.
Yeah.
Yep. I've met a number of people there. I used to go there a couple of times. I haven't been there in about 10 years, 11 years now, I think it was. But yeah, it's a good family-friendly type of horror con. It's like not very big. It's like maybe 2,000-3,000 people come in the door. And it's very friendly. So this con in Lafayette, what's it called?
It's some sort of horror con. I don't remember the name. I had looked it up and I'm trying to get a table there. I just was looking for stuff that was near me. And I was like, oh, look, this is in October. I can do this. It's only an hour away from me. So that will be my first one to go to. It's not a huge one. It's not a big one, but
it's
a good
AVC convention.
It might
be. At least that's what seems to come up when I Google it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So that'll be my first one that I plan on going to, and just kind of starting from there.
Excellent. It's actually always a good idea to start with a small one, because that way you can get your feet wet, and then you can see, hey, what the hell kind of happened? Oh, shit, those people are weird. Oh, shit, those people are my people. Excellent.
Yeah, and it being, you know, pretty local, too, for me, that'll right. help out.
Yeah, being like an hour drive, you said, or whatever, it's like it's easier just like you go for the day, then you come back home.
Yes.
I mean, the whole, like, okay, I can give you an example of the one large one here. It's called Fan Expo, which is now, there's a whole bunch of them North American wide. The one here in Toronto gets 140,000 people in the door before
wow.
COVID. Some of the money that some of the guests make during these shows, it's like, well, you've got your personal security and banker back there. Like when, what's-his-face, Luke Skywalker was there. Holy crap, did he have a lot of people lined up. But yeah, you got to get a hotel, you got to pay for parking, you got to drag shit in. It's like, oh, it's a whole mess. But you can sell a lot of stuff if you're willing to work it.
Yep, I hope to get to that point.
It's good to start with a small one. That was my first convention, was in Horror Realm. Like I said, small one, behind a couple of tables with a whole bunch of other horror authors. It's fun shit.
Yeah.
So do you have the basics down for what you do at a convention?
Nothing more than what I've talked with other authors about. I got to get... So I'm working on a... kind of getting like a author brand logo... it's going to be Southern Discomfort, playing off the Southern Comfort thing, and my roots in the South. So I want to get a banner made, like an author brand that I'll be able to display. I know I need to get tons of copies of my books to display.
Mm-hmm. Usually like giveaway shit like postcards and business cards or whatever, something that people can say, oh, that's nice, and then they'll probably throw it away. Oh yeah, common thing. You walk around, it's like, hey, I gave out 100 cards. There's like 15 of them in the garbage can over here. What the fudge?
I wasted all that money.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. I mean,
really
that stuff
wasted.
Now is pretty low cost anymore. I mean, as long as you're willing to out of pocket a couple of bucks or whatever, you can get a lot of good marketing material that doesn't cost that much.
Yeah, and I know I have help too. Lisa Vasquez with Stitch Smile Publications that Johnny was published with. She's really good at doing stuff like that. So I have her to guide me and help me
cool.
with any type of stuff like that. So, you know, she is just an awesome, awesome help. And she was one of the first ones to spot my talent and believe in me, and Stitch Smile mentored me and helped me grow as a writer. So I am forever grateful to them and indebted to them and Lisa Vasquez.
See, this is also part of the marketing. You got to make sure you spread some love of the people who help and support. It's good stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Because there's always people that are part of it. I mean, as a writer, do you find yourself that if you were to try and go it all alone, would you feel hampered by that? Or the fact that you have people who are supporting you that make it a better thing?
Oh, people supporting, by far. Another big supporter from Stitch Smile for me has been Candace Nola. She has been a big help and really pushing me and guiding me. And it's like, hey, you know, you need to contact so-and-so. They do book reviews for your types of book. I think they would like this. You know, you need to talk to this person over here. Or, you know, she's got me in contact with some other publishers. So it really, really helps, especially when you're first starting off, to have people come around you who have been doing it, who have the connections and who believe in your work to help guide you and support you. I mean, this is, you know, even the writing process is not a one man thing. Like, you've got to have your cover artist, you've got to have your editor. So it helps to always have a team of people who support you, because you can't make it in this business by yourself, by being alone.
Not unless you're Stephen King, but again, he's part of the 5%, right?
Right.
So who came up with the cover for The Dawning and for The Demon Slayer?
So Raventail came up with the cover for The Dawning.
Excellent.
They did that all on their own, which it really pulls out a key element in the book. Theodosia visits the ethereal plane. You know, of course, got that idea from Lovecraft. That's in the book, that's kind of the spiritual realm where she kind of goes back and forth in between. And there's a doorway that starts really, really small, like a black dot. And as she grows older, and as the darkness overtakes her more, the more it grows in her heart, the bigger this dot gets, until it expands far enough for her to be able to walk in.
I can see textures of Lovecraft there.
Yes. So Raventail really liked that, so they took that idea and made it for the cover.
Cool.
Johnny Walker Ranger Demon Slayer, Lisa Vasquez came up with that cover. Johnny's a redheaded dude, and one of the key places that they gather and come up with all their, Johnny comes up with all his dumbass ideas, are in his Silver Bullet Airstream trailer. So she put that on the front. It's kind of where their go-to, where they gather for their meetings. And Johnny gets really pissed off when people haven't heard of horror movies that he likes. and so he really gets frustrated with these emo high school kids, which the thing that's funny is these kids aren't really emo, but Johnny thinks they're emo, so he calls them emo.
So it's like, I don't know what emo is, but you probably are it.
Yes, exactly. You dress in black, so you're emo. That's kind of his mindset.
I dress in black.
Then Johnny would probably consider you an emo.
No, he talked to me one time and he's like, yeah, no, not emo.
So yeah, they get in the Airstream and he has to educate these people on horror movies. And nice. they're only allowed to watch horror movies on VHS.
Ooh, that could be difficult in the next few years.
Well, I'm talking about in the story for Johnny.
Okay.
He's got a huge VHS collection.
Yeah, but you know, VHS degrades.
Yes.
It's just sitting on a shelf, even unwatched, it's degrading.
Yes.
Well, not degrading, but the quality is degrading. Until a point where it just melts. Especially if you're in Texas.
Anymore. Yeah.
Or Louisiana, even. Because I believe it's pretty warm down there right now, isn't it?
It is. It is very, very hot right now for springtime. And, you know, this last week doing my job out in the heat has just been brutal.
Have you seen a movie Big Ass Spider?
Yes, I have.
Because as soon as you started saying pest control, that's where my brain goes.
Yes. And, man, I have seen some nasty, nasty stuff. And
I can imagine.
The latest has been, so there's these roaches called German cockroaches.
Yep.
And they're small and they infest. They come in through like grocery bags and packages.
Ooh.
And they have these little light brown translucent wings.
Yep.
And they multiply like gremlins. And me and one of my other work colleagues went out to treat this big double-wide trailer that had been infested with them. And they were infested in every single room.
Ew.
And we
put on the hazmat suit?
We do, when we do a German Rotstrab, we do have to wear respirators because the aerosol we use to flush them out can really, like, mess your throat up really bad.
And cause other problems overall?
Yes. Yeah. So as soon as we put this aerosol stuff down and, like, some of the cracks along the counter of the kitchen and sprayed, it was just like the whole wall turned brown. There was just hundreds of them crawling out and falling all over the place. And the German roaches have this distinct, nasty smell to them.
Yes.
And so they were just, they were crawling all over the walls, falling on the kitchen counter, doing their little death kick. We were like, man, these people just need to burn this place down.
Yes. Nuking so from bad. Orbits, the only way to be sure.
It was so bad. I've never seen anything that bad of an infestation in my life.
Nice. So. And being down in the warmer states, I'm sure you've got some of those lovely poisonous spiders.
Yeah, we have black widows and brown recluse spiders. So,
well, at least you don't have bird spiders. Those are in Australia.
They're not bird spiders.
Those things are huge.
Yeah, we don't. The spiders down here don't get really big, but it's like everything down here wants to kill you.
Yes. This is why I don't go down there too often. They would like me too much, and I don't like that. Poisonous, deadly things. You know, we don't have native poisonous spiders up here.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, people bring them up because they think they're cool and whatever, and sometimes they escape or whatever, but by nature, they don't seem to like it up here. The whole cold winter thing just seems to be a kind of a big turnoff.
Yeah.
Same with snakes. I think we have one poisonous snake that's native, and then there's another one or two in the western provinces, and that's it. Ain't nothing else.
Yeah.
I like it. I don't mind you have bears and other things that maul the crap out of you, so it's a bit of a tit for tat.
It's kind of
right?
a trade-off, right?
Bear. Poisonous, little tiny, giant mauling. I'm going with the giant mauling.
It's like a choose-your-own-adventure death.
I love those things.
Great books.
Yeah, all sorts of must stuff. So, anything in your stories that you consider taboo that you won't write about?
Nope.
Okay, that's pretty easy.
Yeah, I just think with horror in general, and you know, even with life and the evils that are in this world, and if that's what you're writing about as a horror author, I don't think there's anything off limits. But that's just my own personal opinion.
Right, and like I said, everybody's got a different choice in what they're doing.
Yes.
I mean, I know a few people who have very specific limits. I know there's a big push on a number of horror authors not to have any rape scenes or scenes of that sort of nature, which I understand. Because you can have a good horror story without having that particular emotional trauma being shoved down somebody's throat, whether it's done well or done off camera or out of scene or whatever, or... There's a number of things. I mean, I know there's a number of book publishers have publishing guidelines like none of that, no kids getting killed, and some other stuff. And it's like, I get it, but then they're over on the other side. Oh crap! What the guys would want to do over there?
Yeah, for me, I think it's all about how you handle it, and I think if it's like for me with the rape or the children getting killed. And stuff like that. If it's part of the storyline, in an integral part of the story, then for me, I'll write about it. But if it's just thrown in there to be thrown in there,
exactly,
that's not how I do it with my horror. Like everything is intentional. So if there is a rape scene, if there is, you know, a child dying, then I'm putting it in there because it's going to be an integral part of the story of this person's trauma or what they went through, you know, or what they have to overcome. It's not just thrown in there to say, ooh, let's try to be graphic and have a rape scene and try to shock people. It's it's going to be an integral part of the story.
I mean, there are people who experience that in the real world, and it's like, well, what do you do afterwards? Do you go and become the Terminator, or do you become a basket case? There's choices to go away from there, but...
Yeah, and I will say this just for a trigger warning. In the books that are coming out with Raventel that are the prequel to the Tetramet, that show his origin story, there is, because I interconnect, Lilith plays a huge role in the Tetramet's life, especially in his origin story.
And Lilith, the mother of monsters?
Yes, the mother of demons. And so in order to get the fullness of this character and why she is the way that she is, there's a rape scene in there that is pretty intense, but it's there and it shows how it has affected her and made her who she is. Hmm. It's once it happens, it's a huge underpinning of the storyline and of the trauma that's happened to her that she's never able to really deal with. And so there is that scene in there, and you know, it's not really, really graphic just for the sake of graphic, but it is in there. And you know, if anybody has been through that experience, then and they don't like reading stuff like that, then that may be a section that they want to kind of shy away from.
Yeah, you skip over that stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, don't need to see that, don't need to see that. Okay, good. Okay, they had that, that happened, now we're moving on.
Yes. Well, and it's like anything. If it offends you, or if you can't handle it, or if it leads you into a bad place, then just don't read it. Don't look at it. Don't subject yourself to it. I mean,
right.
We all know what we like, what we don't like, what we can stand, what we can't stand.
Absolutely. Everybody's tolerances are different. Everybody's happy. Wait, no, they're not. Right?
Not at all.
Yeah. So, do you feel it as a writer that it's your place in the world to stand up on a podium and say anything, or are you just trying to make a good story?
I pretty much shy away from politics. I don't feel that's my place. I like to tell a story for entertainment purposes, yes. But it's also a medium for me as well to, you know, maybe help people think about some of the deeper issues of life. Maybe different theological subjects, maybe different philosophical subjects. At the heart of the Dreadful Death series with The Dawning and The Gathering and The Morning, one of the key elements that this little Christian community that's going through all of this evil really wrestle with is the problem of God and evil comes up, and they wrestle with that. And the Theodosius father is a very devout man. He is a professor at UNC of religion and ancient documents. And he's seeing his entire family unravel by being attacked by this evil. And it's just relentless. It doesn't stop. And so he really struggles with this whole concept of the problem of God and evil.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the themes at the heart of that book. But then, you know, there's other stuff that I write that it's just for meant to be a good, entertaining story. So it kind of really just depends on how the mood strikes me and what I want to write about at that moment.
Okay, fair enough. That sounds like a good part of it. Now, I do normally talk a lot about comic books as well, and you did mention, as we talked briefly before the show, yes. that you do have some comic book interests.
Oh, yes. I love horror comics. One of my big interests is I love the old Warren Vampirella magazines. And I am a collector of those. I am slowly trying to build myself up. And
do you have issue number one?
I do not, but
okay, neither
I have been looking and looking and
that's an expensive book right now.
I know. It is very expensive.
To find it in any kind of quality of good grade or whatever.
It's on my wish list.
Yeah, no, I had this thing where this old lady and her friend, her son had passed away, so she had his comics, and she was trying to get rid of them. Said, yeah, sure, I'll come by. I'll take a look at them, whatever. Going through the piles, and it's like, holy shit, Vampirella number one? I, like, took a step back, and she's like, what are you talking about? What's wrong? It's like, oh, and then I looked at it. It was the reprint. It was like, it's a $10 comic. But if it had been the original, I was looking at it a few days earlier, and it's like the original was going for, like, $2,000-$3,000. It's like, that would have been awesome.
Yes.
But not to be.
Yeah. So, huge Vampirella fan. The comic book store I go to down here in Baton Rouge, the owner is a huge Vampirella fan as well. And so he knows I come and I buy them, and he keeps them on stock. Everything that he finds, he puts them out there, and I go and snatch them up when I can.
Do you get any of the new ones? The new series is?
But I'm also... So, like the new Vampirella or just new series in general?
New Vampirella specifically, or any of the other new series in general?
So, I just not too long ago finally wrapped up the Cross Badlands.
That's an interesting series.
A fantastic series. Yes. So I enjoyed The Cross. I just recently finished up Moonshine.
I love that series.
I finished up Harrow County.
I love that series.
Let's see what else I finished up these past several months. Nailbiter.
I love that series.
That one was fantastic.
Premise was awesome.
Right
Serial
now,
killers. Lots
I... Yes. Oh, yeah. It was so fantastic. Such a great, great serial killer storyline. I breezed through those, man.
If you get the opportunity, check out Hack Slash. Not the Japanese Hack Slash, but the Hack Slash of Cassandra Hack.
Okay.
There's some bleed through in a Nailbiter and has, like, I think there's a crossover episode on one issue somewhere.
Ooh. Okay.
But she's basically a young goth chick whose mother was the lunch lady and kind of was a serial killer, died, came back, and it was her job to kill her. Sorry, re-kill her. Very fun series.
Okay. I'm reading Outcast right now. I'm on issue, like, I'm on number 4 of...
There's
yeah,
a TV
the
show
novel.
Based on
I
that.
Get them in the graphic novels. Yes, I haven't watched the TV show yet.
It was okay.
I'm trying to finish the comic before I do, like finish the series.
Yeah, it's like Walking Dead. It's not exactly
100%.
They take
reading?
It and change.
Okay. Oh, Gideon Falls. I just finished the volume 1, The Black Barn.
Yep, I read that as well. You still there?
Recently started Redland.
Cool.
I haven't finished the first volume of that yet, so we'll see how that. But so that one goes. But so far, so good.
Excellent.
So comic wise, that's what I'm currently reading. I did wrap up Army of Darkness 1979 by Dynamite. They did a little run, a little comic run.
I have
that. So that one was
every
fun.
Single Army of Darkness comic ever put out.
Yeah, I'm slowly making my collection with those and trying to snatch up everyone that I could find at my local comic shop whenever I go there.
Cool. Well, that brings us up
That's kind of what I'm reading.
Cool. Well, that brings us up basically to about the end of the show, a couple minutes or running long, but that's okay. There's nobody on after us. Is there any last words you want to say? Anything you want to tell people how to find and follow you and not be creepy but stalkerish and in the nice way?
Yeah, you can look up Ezekiel Kincaid on Amazon and it'll pull up pretty much everything I have out right now. I'm on Twitter, Ezekiel Kincaid, and same thing on Instagram, it's Ezekiel Kincaid. So that's how you can find me, but don't harass me.
No, harassing's bad in general, not in specific, but bad. Think of I spit on your grave, bad.
Yeah.
Speaking of torture movies, those were extreme.
So, yes.
I'm just going to throw it out there. Thank you, Mr. Kincaid, for coming on the show. It was great having you on as a guest, chatting about demons and stuff.
Yes, thank you. Yep. I enjoyed it.
Notice we didn't talk about druids.
We may have to do that next time.
Druids are okay. They're fun guys. They know how to party. They make beer.
There you go.
To everyone else in Afterout Land, thanks again for coming by. Come by again every Wednesday night, Eastern Standard Time at 9 p.m. on this same Bat channel, same zombie channel, every Wednesday. Check us out on the Twitter, check us out on the Instagram, check us out on the Facebook, and any other kind of social media thing that I can possibly find, because I will infiltrate and dominate the whole world if I can. It's a plan. I have it. It's written down somewhere. Have fun. Enjoy whatever's going on and making you happy. Be well. Be happy. Be the best zombie you can possibly be. And after rot yourselves out.